This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up, everybody? It's Denise Salcedo. Welcome back to the channel. I am very excited to introduce to you my guest for today. It is somebody that I've been wanting to interview for a very long time, and he is here. My guest for today is a two-time TNA World Heavyweight Champion, multiple-time champion in WWE, including nine-time tag team champion. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Matt Hardy. Matt, what is up?
Thank you so much for that very warm and kind introduction. That was amazing. I'm good. I'm just hanging out in Oklahoma City. I just finished a big day at the GalaxyCon out here, doing some Comic-Conning this weekend. So yeah, having a good time.
I was going to say, I feel like the Comic-Cons are always so much fun, right? Like getting to meet the fans and just hearing people like share their stories with you. I can imagine that's really awesome.
That's one of the coolest things. And I'm like, I think myself and my brother kind of fall in this category. We're generational talent because, like, we've been wrestling for so long. I'm in year 32 right now, where it's like it's cross generations. I meet so many people that say, like, well, I like was a teenager and I watched you during the Attitude Era. And now I have kids and my kids, they watch wrestling and they saw you on AEW or TNA or whatever. And like, we love to watch you together. And it's like this weird family parent-child bonding thing that, you know, really ties them together over wrestling. And I dig that so much. And I actually dig that with my kids because now my oldest, they kind of understand what I do and they want to watch some of the older stuff and they want to wrestle too, which is real cool. But I love having moments with those people and just hearing, you know, their stories, like some specific match or some specific spot or the return of WrestleMania 33, like they were there and it meant this to them and it was very special and they cherish it for whatever reason. And I feel like just everyone wants to have a conversation and just kind of have a moment with you. And I enjoy giving those.
Yeah, man. Like, it's funny because even hearing you just say that right now, talking about surpassing year 30, like, what did you say? 32? Like, it's crazy. Like, even hearing that number and me saying it again, I'm like, that can't be right. That's so much time. But like, even when I was preparing for this interview, Matt, I started going back and, you know, reliving all of these memories. And I just thought to myself, like, damn, I could really go any direction and touch on any time period because there are so many different options to choose from in order to talk to you and sort of pick your mind. But really quickly, because you mentioned your kids, how's Maxwell?
He's doing great, doing really, really good. He has no fear when it comes to getting in the ring and rolling around and jumping off the ropes now. He's good. And it's strange because he's about to turn 9. He'll be 9 in June. And, you know, it's his last year in the single digits. He'll be 10. I feel like he's almost on the verge of becoming a teenager. But it's great because with him, it's almost like I get to talk to another living adult that I've made. It's really good, really fun. We actually have some stuff that's going to be coming up very soon on TNA from the Hardy Compound. And Maxwell does some really cool stuff in there, which I think people are going to love. It'll be on TV.
Oh, my God.
2 or 3 weeks.
So I'm so happy that you mentioned that because that was something that I was going to ask about because obviously I went back and, you know, started watching everything and I was watching Maxwell when he had his first match. And so then I went back and watched Total Deletion all over again. And so I have that like very fresh in my memory right now. And so I was actually going to ask you if we were going to see any of that again now that you're back in TNA.
You will see some action back on the Hardy Compound before it's all said and done.
Okay, so you know what, let's take some time here because I have a lot of questions about this. Again, it's very fresh in my mind, so I'm curious because when you I started thinking about this because what you were doing at the Hardy compound, it really kind of felt like this was the first of its kind, right? I know now we're seeing a lot more cinematic matches and we've seen so many now, but when you rewind back to that time period, that really was one of its first. Like, I couldn't think of anything that sort of predated it.
Yeah, I mean, our whole goal was like to try and tell a story in a different way, right? Like, I was doing this very weird, strange, different, eccentric, very like a throwback to the past, the old days of Papa Shango or the original Undertaker and some of the stuff they would do. You know, that's what I was trying to do whenever I was doing Broken Matt Hardy, because everybody was like so young and so athletic and doing all this cool stuff. And I said, well, let me go the complete opposite direction. Let me go like very character driven. And then we're thinking like, this is a very strange character who does things in like remote locations. And what if we tried telling a story where we fight just on our property, and that ends up like whoever wins this fight on our property has the right to the Hardy name and the Hardy brand. And it would be a different way of telling a story. And it's very odd, much like Broken Man Hardy was. And that's kind of how the Final Deletion all came about.
Oh my God. So I was curious about that. I know you mentioned Papa Shango, but how did the Broken Matt Hardy character come about? Because like, even when I try to explain the character, I feel like I can't get the right words to try to explain it. I'm just telling someone, well, you got to watch it. Watch it and you'll piece it together.
Well, I think the original inspiration for Broken Matt Hardy would be True Blood. My wife and I, we were watching True Blood at one time. And I thought just the whole vampire concept is so cool. How you see Eric Northman on the show, Alexander Skarsgård, he's 1,000 years old, right? And you see all these different periods where he lived, and like he dresses differently during these different periods. He has different hairstyles. He speaks differently, whatever it may be. So it's like, man, it'd be the coolest thing ever if you could be like an immortal character as a pro wrestler. But obviously we're all human beings. You can't actually be immortal. I said, what is the closest I could get to that? I said, what if I was aware and cognizant of where my soul was, like what body it's in? Like, say, you know, your body, this soul starts in a body, then when that body dies, it goes to another body, then it goes to another body and another body, and that's the closest way you can become you could become immortal in terms. So that's where the Broken Matt Hardy concept came from originally, and I was just aware of what my soul was. That's why I always tried to like name my soul something. Originally it was Zenith, and then the second coming of Broken Matt Hardy, it was Damascus. And I was aware of that. So that was my ability to be 2,000 years old or whatever it was. So that inspiration came from True Blood. But then I also pulled from like True Detective, some stuff from Rustin Cole. I used some Dexter stuff, Salad Fingers, a weird cartoon that is a British cartoon. I used some of that terminology as well. So I pulled from all over the place with Broken Matt Hardy.
See, and I always hear this, right? When actors, they always take a really good character is always sort of taken from a bunch of different things. And when you know and you really understand the world that your character lives in, that's usually what makes like great actors. And even for hosts, they always say, you got to know who you are and who you're talking about. And hearing you talk about that with the Broken Matt Hardy character and all of these different pieces of it, it makes sense as to why it got over so much, because you really understood what you were doing with that.
I had a direction I wanted to go for sure. And then whenever we did that, the contract signing, which was at our house, and it's where my wife came with a fake baby and threw the baby doll into Jeff. And then I attacked him. And, you know, that segment was so polarizing, but it wasn't polarizing in a bad way. I mean, so much stuff is polarizing. I know you get this a lot, you know, you and Sean Ross Sapp get so much stuff, whatever, but like, the polarizing amount on that, there was people who said, oh my God, this reminds me of like the old wrestling, like back in WWF back in the day. This is amazing because it's character driven stuff. This is so great. I'm so happy seeing this in 2016. And then I saw people say like, that is the worst trash I've ever seen in my life. You know what I mean? It was totally polarizing, but so many people were invested in it one way or the other. They either loved it or hated it. And it was just, it got so much feedback. I was like, well, we're on to something, because people like care. People are, it's engaging to people. So they find it fascinating one way or the other. So we kept rolling with it. And like, once the Final Deletion came out, a lot of people were kind of torn on that in the beginning. They didn't understand it. But as time went on, people started going back. They're going, oh my God, like, I get this now. I see what they were doing and I understand it. And it became so hot. And it wasn't necessarily because of like the TNA television, because that isn't what was super popular at the time. They were on Pop TV, which is a very small station. And the final deletion did do a really good number in the rating or whatever, but it was just like so many people started uploading those videos everywhere, and everything I was doing, I was trying to make it into a meme or, you know, a GIF, whatever it may be. So I would look for viral moments, and that is what made Broken Matt Hardy and the Broken Universe take off.
Yeah, I was going to say, even if you haven't seen it, if you haven't seen the entire thing, I'm pretty sure everyone here has at least seen the meme or the GIF someplace of you, yeah, you know, doing the creep up part. Yeah. You see it everywhere. But it really was, to me, like, just now going back and seeing everything that has happened in the cinematic world of pro wrestling across the board, that really was where things first got started. Like, I started thinking, like, if we didn't have that, would we have gotten these cinematic matches during the pandemic, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I was kind of doing that at the right place at the right time, you know. So it was cool that I had the opportunity to do those. And, you know, TNA gave me the ball and let me run with it. And it ended up being really good and kept people talking about the company, especially when the company was, like, legitimately in a pretty bad state as far as it was going financially. And they ended up selling at that point to the company that now owns it, which is Anthem. But yeah, it was very enjoyable. And if I did have, was any kind of a factor or shape any of the decision to do cinematic matches later or inspiration, then that's obviously very flattering.
How long did it take to shoot a total nonstop deletion?
The whole show when we did
the whole show. Yeah. Cause it was so much.
Yeah. Yeah. We did that in two days. It was two full nights. We were able to do the stuff in the building, in the Dome of Deletion, the steel building out behind my house, and earlier during the daytime, right? And then the stuff that we did, Apocalypto, which was the tag team match, which was all over the property, that was shot over the course of two nights.
That was cool too. I definitely want to see that again. Okay, so while I was watching this, I kept thinking, how did you guys do the fireworks stuff? It seems like something so simple, but I'm like, you have to know which fireworks to get, so, you know, make sure you don't blow off an arm. I started overthinking and overanalyzing this, but it's really freaking cool.
It is. And it's so funny. There's so many people just like, oh my God, will you shoot fireworks at me if they're coming to the Hardy compound? it was just once again, and I did it be different. It was something that we just happened to have. Jeff and I, we've always been guys who are fans of fireworks and love doing them on 4th of July or New Year's Eve, whatever. And we happened to have some around. And we said, what if, you know, Broken Matt Hardy fired fireworks at you, you know, trying to destroy you, trying to delete you. And I said, we could even turn around and you do it to me. And that's just kind of where it started, because it was there and we had it. It was handy.
Yeah. And the other thing that I've always really loved is the when you guys are sparring with the kangaroo, and I forget his name because I know he had a name and I forgot his name, but
Smoking Joe Frazier.
There you go. What, dude, the kangaroo, I remember thinking, like, at one point I'm like, you gotta protect yourself because this kangaroo was just like willing to kick anywhere. You know what I mean?
It was terrifying. That was one of the most terrifying parts of any shoot that we did, because it was like older kangaroos. It's a place that's about 10 miles from our house. And they gave us like full permission to kind of go out there and do these things with the kangaroo. They said, just don't strike the kangaroo. He can hit you, but he's older and he's not really as vicious as he used to be, whatever. So we would go out there. There'd be times he would claw the shit out of us and scratch us and make us bleed. But there'd be times he would lay it in too. You had to really be on, you know, you had to be on guard whenever you're out there, because he would step back on his tail and kick the shit out of you.
Oh my God. I mean, how many people can say that they've wrestled a kangaroo? I mean, you've totally wrestled a kangaroo.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a fun experience. It was crazy, insane that we did it, but it a very, very cool, fun experience.
So, you know, obviously your return to TNA, it has been, you know, it's very exciting to see that, because again, now we're all of a sudden we're seeing Broken Matt Hardy's back, and you were mentioning just now that you're looking to do a lot more. So I'm excited to see what's going to go down with that. But I do want to talk about your ending with AEW, because I know that your, at least from reports that I read, your contract was up and then you just chose not to resign. So why did you choose not to resign and continue on with AEW?
My contract was coming up, and I feel like they thought Jeff and I were kind of on the same schedule, but ours were a little different between some time he'd had off and injury time and whatnot. And then once my contract was coming up, it was the date came up and they offered me a deal, but it had fewer dates, where I think they're going to probably try and do this system a little more going forward, give guys like X amount of dates and pay them so much per date. But like the amount of dates wasn't what I wanted, because like wherever I'm going to be for these last few years that I can do this, I want to contribute wherever I'm at. So I want to try and be like involved in, you know, an important storyline and stuff where I can still stay relevant, but still help elevate younger talent as well too. So that was kind of that's the reason I chose not to resign at that time. And we've still talked, and we still have been talking and negotiating some. You know, we're still talking about things, and you know, we may reach a deal, who knows, you know. But right now TNA's just been great. I've been able to do it on a per date basis, and we kind of had this idea about doing this thing with Moose right from the jump, and signed off on it. I liked it a lot. And yeah, for the immediate future, while I'm out and not under contract anywhere, I just plan on sticking with TNA right now.
I love that. So it is interesting because, you know, you kind of talk about how you want to help and you want to do all of this stuff, right? When you have been in the business for as long as you have, and how do you know when you want to start wrapping things up, and also how you want to wrap things up? Because everybody's wondering, like, hey, are the Hardy Boys ever going to go back in WWE? Is that the place where they decide to end their career? You know, how does that work?
I mean, that's even something that I've had some conversations with them too. Like, I haven't had super serious conversations with them, but I feel like when it's all said and done, we'll end up probably retiring there, probably doing a Hall of Fame. I mean, that's our home. If it wasn't for WWE, we wouldn't be who we are right now. You know, they afford us many, many opportunities. But yeah, I mean, it's pro wrestling too. Never say never. Anything can happen. And that's one of the fun parts about what I'm doing right now. It's like my future isn't predictable. You never know exactly what's going to happen. And I like the idea that I could kind of pop up anywhere at any time. Like, I do like having that in my back pocket. Like, even showing up at Rebellion, whenever I showed up and hit the ring on Moose and hit him with a Twist of Fate, that was just so much fun, and still one of those things that shocked a lot of people. John Alba got so mad that I didn't tell him before that I was going. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell my brother. He didn't know.
You know? Wait, you didn't tell Jeff?
No.
Why not?
And it's fine. He's like, oh, that was real cool that you showed up last night, man. That was great. It was hot. Nice clip. you know, just – I feel like if you want kayfabe to work in 2024 and you want to keep a secret, because, you know, all it takes, even when I got to the building, I came like halfway through the show, they ushered me right into this room and they said, oh, well, you can go ahead and get a coffee or this. I said, no, I'll just stay in this room, just alone in silence, very quiet, because all it takes is someone taking a picture of me or just sending a message to you or Sean or John, whoever. Right? Matt Hardy.
Probably to Sean. Not to me. Probably to Sean.
But, you know, that's all it takes. So I really tried to invest myself in trying to be as much of a secret as it could possibly be.
Yeah. And I mean, at this point, like, honestly, with social media, with the way everyone's breaking news and everything's happening, it's so hard nowadays to keep those stuff under wraps. And when it does happen, it's kind of exciting. Like, I know, like, as a fan, I like to watch and be surprised, genuinely not know that something is going to happen.
So do I. I mean, that's the best. I love, like, you know, if there's a show that was out and if I like missed an episode, like, I wouldn't want to skip ahead. I want to watch stuff sequentially in order and be surprised and be entertained. And like, I don't know, sometimes wrestling fans get so obsessed with just wanting to know what's going on in the backstage show. I really love to just sit back and be entertained. I want to be surprised.
Right. Because we do live like in this time and age, especially with Twitter, right? You're just like, refresh. What's trending today? Yeah. Oh, that was trending yesterday. I don't care anymore. What's trending today? Like, I want to know the new stuff, right? Yeah. So that's sort of the landscape that we're in. Before we shift gears, I do want to ask a few more questions regards to AEW, because one of the people that obviously you got to work there for several years, and you have a very, I don't even want to say connection or history or however, but it's the Young Bucks. The Young Bucks, you and your brother were part of what influenced teams like the Young Bucks. And so for you to just know how influential you were, obviously not just to the Young Bucks, but to so many different professional wrestlers and so many young guys that have grown up and now done their own thing, does that ever get old to like hear? Because it is so freaking cool to just know how much of an impact you had.
I mean, it's very cool. It means a lot when people share that and say that, and it really kind of puts everything into perspective about, you know, how much you have done. And I love the Bucks, Matt and Nick. They're the best. And they're two of the ones that, you know, are fighting. They're like, come on, you got to get the Hardys together and you got to do them right. And, you know, utilize them in the right way. Like I got lots and lots and lots of love for them. I'm a big Young Bucks guy, and I'm so happy to see them doing what they're doing right now. I love what they're doing. I think the bit they're doing with the Elite and Jack Perry, I think it's, you know, Okada, I think it's been great thus far.
Yeah, man. And it's just, it's crazy to think, because when you go back to the very beginning, when you went, I want to start with WWE, obviously, mm-hmm. because that's where you guys became the Hardy Boys. That's where it really, really took off. When you think back to the beginning there, did you ever think that you would go on, you and your brother, to have the legacy and the career and the impact that you guys did?
We definitely didn't think that in the beginning. Our goal in the beginning, we wanted to be the World Tag Team Champions one time. If we did that, we accomplished everything we ever set out to do. And obviously, we got to do that many times over. And we both had very successful singles careers, and we'd been all over and been successful in many different promotions, which is very cool. We had no idea we would have this kind of longevity and we would build this kind of following. We have still, like, when we do these Comic-Cons, whether it's we're together or singles, it's like our followings are unreal. You know, our fans are so, so loyal and faithful. We call them the Die Hardy fans, you know, and they always show up. And they always share stories, and they're just so thoughtful and so respectful. And it's so nice too, like, especially interacting with fans like that, as opposed to like online on social media, you know, it's nice to be in front of real genuine fans who really care, and they appreciate your hard work and your hard effort to entertain them over the years.
It's always a night and day different. I can imagine, right? Like, yeah. It's like you're online. It's so dark. And sometimes you're like, oh my God, everybody hates me. And then in person, I remember at StarCast, I went into a room and you were there. And I think you were across from Scott Steiner. You were there with Jeff, but you were on the other side of the room, this big ballroom. And I just remember when I was walking in, somebody was walking out crying their eyes out. And I was like, oh my God, what happened? And it was because she had met you and she had met your brother.
That's cool. We still get those. Like, it's so crazy. Like 2000, 2001, we would have so many young girls crying or young children like crying and excited and whatever. But like, I mean, we still get that nowadays. I mean, and there's kids that, once again, like a generational gap, that are even like younger kids that are like super excited to meet us, that are now teenagers, you know, that just started following our careers and 2007, 2008, 2009, when I was the ECW champ and Jeff was the WWE champ. You know, it's wild. And we have people that the whole Broken Universe, you know, really grew a life of its own. There are a lot of people that just love that. That's why I'm so excited. We're returning to the Hardy compound soon and doing some really, really fun stuff there. But it's great. And just once again, it's so humbling that we were able to make such an impact. We're just two kids who grew up in Podunk, Cameron, North Carolina, two country boys, and we wanted to be pro wrestlers and win the World Tag Team Championships one time, but we've had a hell of a career.
Yeah, man. And just thinking also too about like the reinvention portion, that's something that you've been given a lot of credit for too, is being able to reinvent yourselves. You know, we started this conversation with Broken Matt Hardy, but right. There's been so much other different stuff that you've done. Like I was just looking back at, I found this website that had all of your Matt facts, by the way, the ones that you've used. Cause I'm like, I wonder if anybody's got them down on a list anywhere. And lo and behold, they do. So it's all these like little things that, you know, you were able to do and reinvention. How important and how pivotal has that been? And is that something that's always on the forefront of your mind where you're like, I got to keep trying to think of new ideas so that, hey, you can stay relevant in a moving landscape like pro wrestling?
Yeah. I mean, in pro wrestling, things have to change because, like, you know, if you're an actor and you play the same character, like even, I mean, there's some shows that were, you know, like Breaking Bad had 5 seasons. And I know the last season was broken into 2 pretty strong seasons. But, you know, they felt like they wrapped that up at just the right time. Dexter had been 8 seasons. And, you know, the first time it ended, people weren't very happy with the ending. And then they did Dexter New Blood. They weren't extremely happy with that ending as well. But it's hard to have a character for 8 years, right? And still stay fresh, still like you're doing new stuff or like breaking ground or blazing a new trail as far as the character goes, as far as story and what the arc is. And I feel like in pro wrestling, it's just the same. And it's even harder. Like, we're 32 years deep into this. Like, you know, you have to be able to, like, change the character so that it's different. Because just, like, one consistent character can't really be interesting enough to tell this many different stories and this, that, and the other thing. They can have good matches and be good wrestlers. But I feel like the entertainment aspect, which I'm a big fan of, I'm a big fan of that more now than in-ring wrestling, obviously. And just being able to change and go a different direction, it kind of, like, gives you a refresh in many ways, because Matt Hardy version one was perfect for me because I was going in a different direction where I was going to be a heel. And then I just said, like, now you're seeing the real true Matt Hardy, the Matt Hardy version one, you know, not the extreme guy who wants to do stunts and be a daredevil. I said, you're seeing Matt Hardy version one. And then I integrated all of the, you know, internet stuff with it, like the Matt facts and stuff. And then, you know, the broken Matt stuff, once again, was a throwback to go back in the day to like the Papa Shango stuff. And when he was doing the thing and he was making Ultimate Warrior bleed from his head and the Undertaker, the magic, lightning, all that, Kane, fire. It was really to try and do like a supernatural over the top character that was almost supernatural, if anything else. So yeah, it's been fun doing that. And I like trying to like relate things that I really love or things that I think I would be okay at and like figuring out a way to take those to the extreme and whatever the character may be.
Damn, you know, just like hearing all of that sort of piece together, it's very cool because I like to get into the mind of how all of this is put together, because that's how you learn more. And hearing these stories is really awesome. Now, I would absolutely hate myself if we didn't get into where I started becoming a fan, Matt. And I'm that person that like TLC, that was my jam as a kid. I watched this and I was like, like, I saw you guys, you know, do these crazy things, and I just didn't know how it was done, how it was possible. And I truly feel that it's those memories that is what kept me being a fan and, you know, continued moving me forward as a fan. And I feel like I meet so many people and they're always like, yeah, man, like the freaking Hardys, I was such a fan, blah, 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 whatever, right? And so I do want to touch on TLC. So I want to get to it. So I rewatched to make sure that I was like, I got to rewatch all of this. You know, like, this is fun stuff for me. Sure. SummerSlam 2000, the first TLC. I want to ask you about that bump that you took off of the ladder to the table backwards. Yeah. Because when I rewatched that, because obviously when you watch it the first times, it's like, oh my God, that was so awesome. But rewatching it and seeing how it happens and seeing how you land perfectly in between the ring and the barricade, that was kind of nuts when you think of the execution of that.
Yeah, we measured that one out specifically because that was a dangerous thing. I mean, you fall too far back and you snap your neck on the barricade. You fall too short and then your legs get caught up on the ropes and you smash your head and your head and neck into the ring apron. You know, it had to be done perfectly. So we'd done a thing where like we'd taken the ladder and like leaned it back and guys were holding the ladder just to make sure that I would just have enough room to clear. And like we had it marked out perfectly. So that we tried to take precautions with that. And this is pro wrestling. You're going to get hurt at some points. I mean, it's very much full of risk. And especially when you're doing matches like TLC matches, you're just trying to do the best calculated risk you can do. And fortunately for that one, that one was practically perfect.
Yeah, it really is. Especially when you talk about like the what could have happened. But yeah, Here's the thing. So first TLC, you're going in there, you guys are young, and to be put in a match like this, of this caliber, with this type of stipulation, what was running through your mind? And also, what did you even think of the concept when you first were told? Were you down for it? Or were you like, oh, this is a little crazy?
No, I mean, Jeff and I, we would do ladder matches on indie shows against each other where I would be Surge, Matt Hardy, and he would be Will-O-The-Wisp. And, you know, we'd do 20 minutes and do all kinds of crazy ladder match stuff on indie shows in front of 40 people, you know? So, like, we knew we could do good stuff. And we knew if we got Edge and Christian in a match like that, which was the first ever tag team ladder match at No Mercy, we knew we could break new ground and we could do really special stuff that hadn't been done before. And that's kind of like how the whole TLC snowball started rolling from there. And yeah, we were up for it. We were all young and invincible and felt like $1 million, and we were ready to take any bump. We were all crazy and motivated. And like, we really wanted to we wanted to establish ourselves and make our mark on the pro wrestling business. And fortunately that did it for us, those TLC matches.
Yeah, they're like really unforgettable. And obviously everybody talks, oof, that WrestleMania 17 TLC.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think back to that, what are some of the memories that stick out to you the most?
You know, the it's so iconic, the scene where Edge spears Jeff, where Adam spears Jeff down off, you know, when he's holding up to the ring, that's holding the title. And then Bubba and I, we go smashing through those four tables on the outside, which once again, that was very much a lot of trust, because if I jump first or if Bubba jumps first and one person breaks the table before the other one, the other person is going to be in a bad shape. It's going to be a lot of trust. We had to hit those exactly at the same time for that to go perfect. And we did. Once again, it was a risk, and we were taking a very big calculated risk. But at the end of the day, Denise, I mean, that's what life is, right? A risk in many ways. So very proud of how that match came out. And I felt like that was the best match of all the series.
Yeah, it's just wild, honestly. Which one do you think was the most brutal?
I would say, as far as being beat up, it probably even, it's not technically a TLC, but it kind of like was the blueprint for the first TLC, that triple threat ladder match that we did at WrestleMania 16, where we still did everything, but like Jeff did that swanton and he dislocated his heel and everybody was beat up. I got pushed off the ladder stage that was on the table that was on top of the ladders, the little table stage on top of the ladders, and went through another table, which was rough. Everybody came out of that one pretty beat up. That was probably the most brutal.
Man. Now, see, here's the thing. When, you know, obviously when you're watching all the guys, everybody's worried for everybody, right? Of course, you know, your performers, your humans, all of that. As fans, you're watching it and you're like, oh my God, like they can do anything, right? Like they're superheroes, right? You're thinking how you're thinking, right? When your brother, Jeff Hardy, has been known to do some of the craziest things in professional wrestling, as a brother, when you're seeing that, has there ever been a moment where you're like, oh my God, just please, how do you feel when he's going out there and doing these insane stuff?
Yeah, I mean, especially as we got older, that's one of the reasons I made him become Brother Nero, because he felt so obligated to give wrestling fans a swanton or a whisper in the wind every single match. You know, and I like said, as Brother Nero, you obsolete mule, I'm not going to allow you to go to the top rope. And that was part of the reason I was like, because like at the end of the day, at that point, I mean, he's just such a big star, Jeff Hardy. Like people are excited to see his presence. They want to see him wrestle and perform. He doesn't have to do everything, but he really feels like he owed them that, which is cool. And it's very much Jeff. Like when he does something, he goes all in. But he enjoyed doing that Brother Nero stuff too. And then it was so great that like at the Great War, we did a thing where I let him indulge in his addiction, and he actually got to jump off the ladder and put Crazy Steve through a table for the win or whatever. But it's one of those things where I just like, God, he would sacrifice his body so much. And I was like, dude, like, please, especially as you get older, you got to really pick and choose your spots. But he's a maniac, man. He's an anomaly and one of a kind for sure.
Man, it is. I remember just like, I don't know. I mean, there's so many moments that pop into my head. And when you think about them, it's just like these moments were able to get such a rise out of you, and they're unforgettable. So it's very, very cool. Matt, obviously with the Hardy Boys being one of the most iconic tag teams out there, for you, who are those tag teams? I know sometimes wrestlers hate this question, but it's the Mount Rushmore questions. Mount Rushmore of tag teams, in your opinion, for you as a fan, from a fan's perspective.
For me as a fan, I mean, the first person that pops in my mind is the Road Warriors. Those guys stand out as they were great. I love the Road Warriors. Rock and Roll Express was a big fan of those guys as well. It's hard not to put the Dudleys, you know, on there, just because they really are probably the most decorated tag team champions of all time. And there's a lot of great tag teams. You know, some people would stick us on there, but I'm not gonna necessarily go with us right now. I would also say I think the Bucks. I'm a big fan of the Bucks. I think the Bucks are gonna end up being one of the greatest tag teams of all time too.
Dang, that's very, very cool. Matt, before we wrap things up, I do want to go ahead and just kind of close out with, you know, what, dang, 32 years in professional wrestling. You mentioned some of the cool stuff you're doing with TNA. You mentioned, you know, how things may or may not go down with you and Jeff, maybe someday returning back to WWE. What are those things that you still want to do? What's the ideal vision?
I was a huge pro wrestling fan, and I just wanted to be a pro wrestler and make a living doing it. And I've been gifted with that opportunity for so long. And it's just led me to such a great life. I'm so blessed and I'm so grateful for it. And I think my goal is just to do it while I can do it, because I enjoy it and I love it. It's something I'm passionate about, and it's just fun. And I love the fact that my kids get to see me do it now. So I think I just want to be involved in something that is a solid story. I'm not worried about putting on 5-star matches or bangers, as John says. That word, I have a big hate relationship with the word banger.
Oh, but it's so fun to use, because you're like, that was a banger.
Yeah. Well, too many people, sometimes the internet is too catered to, and all they care about is the banger, not the actual moment or the story, which is going on in things too. But I want to be involved in stuff that is a good story, stuff that is compelling, where you're contributing to a show in some way, and also helping to elevate young talent while you're doing it.
Damn right. Matt, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I know you've had a busy day, but I'm very happy that we got able to do this. I was very happy when, shout out to John for making this happen, because I was like, dude, hell yeah. I reached out and I was like, do you think Matt will be down to do this? And he was like, let me ask him. So I was very happy that you agreed and that you said yes. Before we go, please let the people know where they can support you on social media, where they can watch TNA, all that good stuff.
Just catch me across the board at Matt Hardy Brand. My YouTube channel is Matt Hardy Brand. That's where also the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy podcast, that's where it lives as far as watching it, if you want to see it visually. And that also comes out on all the podcast areas, where there's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Matt Hardy Brand on Instagram, Matt Hardy Brand on Twitter, X, whatever you call it nowadays. And that's my stuff. And TNA is on Access TV. It airs Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. And I think we have the TNA Plus app. You can watch it on there. It's cool, though. They're doing a lot of fun stuff. And I've really enjoyed my time there thus far.
And really quickly, also, I know you just mentioned it right now, but the podcast, man, it's been awesome to hear, like, the work that's been going down with you and John, just everything that you guys been able to do. Really quickly, for the people who haven't heard the podcast yet, you know, tell us about what kind of stuff they can get from the podcast.
I really enjoy doing the podcast, and I feel like I've gotten much better now that we've been doing it for a couple of years, as far as like talking in long form. And I enjoy some of the interactions John and I have. Like, we actually talked about Saudi Arabia this last week. It's the latest episode. And it's very interesting, because like, I was there and I saw the Saudi Arabian fans that were just so excited to be there. And they love meeting, you know, their favorite WWE wrestler. And they just like loved wrestling and like, thank you for coming. You know, those people. And it was so nice to be over there entertaining them. And just the steps that WWE has taken, you know, they said in the beginning, they want to make it more of a deal where the women can go and the women can wrestle and they can be more active and more integrated, and how that would inspire, you know, young women in Saudi. And it's cool that they have accomplished that to a degree, you know, that the women are actually on the shows. They went from not being able to go in the beginning to now they do go and they perform. And it's interesting. And I kind of talk about it from a perspective of being a wrestler there and seeing some of the inspired Saudi people that were there at the show and how much it meant to them too. And I love that John he'll put on his journalist hat, you know, and he'll come at me with some tough questions and we'll get to have banter back and forth. And I really enjoy that. And I think I look at wrestling more like a casual fan would. And John, I know John kind of thinks his terms like, what is a casual fan exactly? And I feel like he looks at wrestling as more of a smart fan. So I think we have an interesting dichotomy when we have those discussions as well. And usually that makes for a real interesting conversation.
It definitely does, man. I love that. So I'm going to post all of the links to that in the description box below so you guys can go and check that out. Matt, thank you so much. It was an honor to chat with you here on the podcast, and we'll catch you guys on the next one. Bye, everyone.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.